I was always looking for other way of making money. I just didn't feel like my life is, I don't want to settle. Andy, you got to work hard. Everybody is rooting for you to fail. No, they're not. I make a very quick 35,000 US net profit for absolutely nothing. Just coordinating this and that. And they get a boat coming in, vessel coming into China, $35,000. And I was like, wow, that's easy money. That's really easy money.
All right, welcome everyone. John Corkin here. I'm the host of this show. And, you know, I'm sure you've listened before. I trust you've listened before because we have had some amazing guests this past year. And I'm so proud of all the great guests we've had on. We've had smart CEOs, founders, and entrepreneurs from all kinds of companies. And if you look at the archives, we've got Netflix, we've got Kinko's, YPO, EO, Activation Blizzard, LendingTree, OpenTable, and many more, Redfin, Gusto, you name it. Check it out. And of course, this episode brought to you by Rise 25, our company where we help B2B businesses to get clients, referrals, and strategic partnerships with Done For You podcasts and content marketing. And you go to our website at rise25.com or email us at support at rise25.com to learn more about what we do. All right. My guest here today is Andy Chang. He's a co-founder of Optinizers and Freight Genesis. He is also a lead at Highlight Freight Management, which is a family business. We'll talk about that. He's currently very active in Entrepreneurs Organization, which is how he and I connected. He's been president of EO Los Angeles, which is a very large chapter and very active in a lot of different roles and lived a very international life living all over the globe. So we're going to hear about all these different businesses that he started. And there are some people that call themselves a serial entrepreneur and they're not really a serial entrepreneur, but he truly is a serial entrepreneur, has started multiple different businesses. So Andy, I'm excited to have you here today. And first of all, you grew up in Taiwan. And, you know, I always ask people about what they were like as a kid and, you know, were they doing paper routes and stuff like that? And in your words, you said you were a spoiled kid. You did grow up in an entrepreneurial family, but didn't get around to money-making endeavors until, I believe, college, you said.
Yeah. Hi, John. Yeah, like I said, in the pre-co, yes, I was pretty spoiled. I think my parents treated me really, really well. And I never need to worry about money. I don't spend much, but then I didn't have to spend much. But then there's no money, like complain about money in my life until I want to make some money in doing college. So when I was studying in Canada, I went back to Taiwan during summer and winter. I used that couple of weeks or months to become an English tutor. And that was my first entrepreneur. I was a money making opportunity. I just seized that moment. And then I don't know how to teach English. I just fake it on you make it, I guess. I made some decent money for college student. I think that was a decent money in Taiwan. So that was my first entrepreneurial experience.
You know, I've met so many people that, you know, when they're given so much that they're just not motivated to work, to start a hustle, to generate money if they've got enough money in their bank account from their parents. Or conversely, I've interviewed lots of people that grew up poor. And so they're motivated to go out there and make some money because they want things. They want a pair of shoes or something like that. Why do you think if you were raised and your parents, as you said, you know, kind of spoiled you, what motivated you to go out there and, you know, teach English during college?
That's a good question. I think that also came with later story. I'm always very cautious about this. I just knew my life was too perfect, too easy. Like my parents are very nice to me on this, is just be a good student. And it's very Asian mentality. Just your job is to be a good student. You don't need to be a good son. It's not even part of a requirement. Just be a good student. Study, 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 study. I always knew that was too easy. If you tell me that this is it, be a good student and get a good job, your life is done, I would be for sure. I knew that was not true. So I will always was very cautious about that. I knew life was not that easy.
If this was a movie, this would be like foreshadowing like the pandemic, which is looming down, you know, down the line, and which will play a big part in your story a little bit later. All right. So you study in Toronto, I believe. So this is
University of Toronto. Yes.
Okay. So you grew up in Taiwan. Was that a big cultural change for you moving to Canada?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think I was given like a 1 week notice when I was in Taipei, where my mom said, "No, you're gonna quit school from Taiwan and then Taipei, and you're gonna to Canada," and then she said Vancouver. I was like, there was no Google in the 90s. So I was like, where the heck is Vancouver? What's Vancouver actually? What's Vancouver? Went there, did not speak a word of English and
Wow.
in public school. And then took me 6 months to figure out how to communicate. And then my mom said, no, I'm sending you to a private school, which is on Vancouver Island. And then
Did
that
they go
was the
with you? Is this high school now?
it's a boarding school. So
Is it boarding
my
school? Okay.
mom, yeah, my mom sent me to a boarding school on
How
Vancouver
old were
Island.
you?
I went to Canada in public school in 8th grade and then went to the
So you're
boarding
like
school in 9th grade. Yeah,
13,
13,
nine, 13 to
13.
14. And
Yeah.
what was that like?
That was, I think this is actually funny that you asked me this question. It was terrifying at the beginning, but I think it just shows who I am. I just try. So my mom, I remember the first year, my mom said, "Oh, at the boarding school, just sign off for everything you see on the board, on school board, sign off for everything." So anything, I just sign off, I put my name on it without even reading what's there. It's like, okay, sign off. So I sign off for bungee jumping without
Bungee
knowing.
jump.
I signed up for bungee jumping. I
You
was
didn't know what
there.
it was?
I didn't know what it was. And then until I was on the bridge, it was like, holy.
Barely speak English. You have no
I
idea what it
just,
is, and all of a sudden
no.
you're on
And
a
then
bridge.
I was a 9th grader. You know, you better not withdraw. You better not cry. You're going to get bullied the way out of for the
Oh,
next
yeah.
4 years. So I was like, suck it out. And everybody jump. I guess what happened? I jump and 3, 2, 1, bungee. I 3, 2, 1, and then jump. I fainted. So
Oh,
I don't. So funny thing, my son just asked me about my bungee jumping experience literally last night.
yeah.
He was like, "Dad, what was like bungee jumping?" He's like, "I
You
don't
don't
remember
remember.
because I fainted." So,
Oh my gosh.
I just signed up for that, and then I signed up for a Broadway show. I could be on a school play. I think the play was called Oklahoma. So at the same time, there was a unfortunate thing happening in Oklahoma City. Remember, John, that's the Oklahoma City
Yeah.
bombing. So I know that's new. I knew that news. So I keep thinking, okay, we're gonna go to Oklahoma City to visit, the
That's
orphan,
what you
whatever
thought
you
you were
call
doing.
it.
You didn't think you were
So
signing up for a play.
I didn't know what the hell was play, because to me, play means play. I mean, like, I didn't know
Yeah.
it was a show. So
Right.
I was very confused for the first 2 months. Every night we had a, because boarding school, we go after prep time, we go practice dancing and singing. I was just very confused. We're going to go visit Oklahoma City. Why do we need to sing and get costume? It wasn't until the third month I realized, oh, I signed up for Broadway play. And I was like, okay. Yeah.
Jeez.
So my nickname at my old high school was I'm the Oklahoma boy, because this is the Asian dude, Asian
Asian
kid
kid.
who signed up for a play, didn't know what the hell he was doing.
That's
And that was,
hilarious.
if you think about it now, long term, and looking back 25 years ago, that's pretty entrepreneurial experience. You're getting things without knowing and it's trying to figure things out.
You
Yeah,
jump
it
off a
was.
bridge, pass out, and then a midway down, try and figure out what you're doing. That's pretty much the on that's a good metaphor for
Yeah.
entrepreneurship.
Say yes first, seize their moment, and then figure something out later. But I
Yeah.
didn't know. I didn't know.
What a
Yeah.
crazy experience. All right, let's jump forward a number of years. So you're 26 years old. You're about getting married, and something major happened in your life that changed your life forever.
Yeah, I mean, I met my wife during my years at the University of Toronto. We both were from Taiwan, so we met in Taiwan. It's a perfect relationship, and I just knew she was the one. So I just wanted to get married and settle down and then move forward to the next thing I need to focus on. So I was working for AC Nielsen, a market research company, and I was talking to my client that when you work for agency, your goal is to be hired by your client. So GSK was my client, the pharmaceutical company. So they already said, "Hey, finish this program at AC Nielsen. We're going to hire you." I thought my life was pretty much set for the next 20, 30 years. You just go to client side, you work for clients, and you hopefully the company hire you a salary double in Taiwan. I thought everything was figured. And that's why I'm going to get married in 26, going to have kids early. And it wasn't 2 weeks before my wedding. My dad called me to the hospital and told me he has stage 4 lung cancer. At that time, his doctor told him he has 3 months left.
Wow.
So, John, guess what was my first reaction when he told me that?
Well, probably a lot going through your head, but
No,
no, nothing.
mine
No.
was this. I knew it. I knew my life was too easy. I knew it. I was like, here we go. I knew something's going to happen. I just didn't figure it's going to be my dad got sick, but I just figured. And then next thing I know is I somehow just raised my hand, say, okay, I'll take care of your business.
Because he was running the business. And by the way, I had a similar feeling probably around the same time in the late 90s. For those who didn't live through this era, it was a very peaceful time. There was, the economy was doing really well all throughout the 90s. And then I remember two things. The Columbine massacre was really traumatic for me, that we've now had many school shootings, but that was in 1999.
Correct.
And then 9/11.
Nine
And
eleven.
I remember before 9/11 saying to my dad that I felt like our generation didn't really have anything to define them. I mean, at the time I was like 23, 24 years old, 22, something like that. There wasn't a Vietnam like my parents' generation had. There wasn't a World War II like his parents' generation had. Now, unfortunately, I feel like we've had a bunch of things that have defined us, but
Yeah.
yeah.
We're in that uncertainty age, 9/11, and then the first financial crisis in Southeast Asia, I remember, or
Yeah.
Korea. But then at that time, we're student. Like,
Yeah.
okay, it happened. So, okay, not that we care what we don't, it's like there's nothing we can do. But
So
yeah.
you get married, your dad has stage four cancer. What do you do next?
I volunteered to take over his company. So I got married 2006, June, and my wife was pregnant almost immediately after the wedding. And then within the month, we moved to Shanghai. For the very first time, I went to China, and then I was a researcher by AC Nielsen. And then within 2 months span, I'm the owner of a business. I wasn't even sure what the heck my dad was doing.
So your dad
So
didn't talk to you much about the business
he
when you're
gave
growing
me a
up.
handover for like a month, and then he had to go back to Taiwan to get treatment. So
And
and
was
then
he really integral to the company at the time?
yeah, he was very involved. But then I John, it was like the first time I realized how life works. Like you got a shareholder coming in, so some shareholder who's still with me, like my uncle, is so supportive. You got shareholder just basically ditch me. Like you can feel like how, I guess, how that's reality sets in, right? That you got,
So
I
your
was,
dad wasn't the sole owner. There were other owners,
there were others,
shareholders. Okay.
but then with those little brotherhood handshake agreement, however, it was just reality sets in where I was seeing the very different culture, even the world Chinese, world Asians, it's very different. And I remember this one night, me and my wife were watching a lot of, movies at home. And it was that, oh my God, we're done for the night. And then you check your clock, it was 7 p.m. But then we start crying. We're like, this is our life. This is our life. We have no friends in Shanghai. We don't know. I don't know what the heck I was doing every day at the company. And nobody listened to me. And why would they? I don't know. I'm the youngest person. It turns out they call me the boss. I feel very awkward
So you
for the
come
first.
in, you are the son of your dad. They've never met you before. How
Never.
many employees are you having
We
to
got 15 at
lead?
that time.
15. So you have 15 employees, and you come in, you're the son of the boss. They've never met you before, and you've got to earn their respect.
They had to learn their respect. I need to deal with a lot of office politics. You got the right-hand person want to take over the company, try to do things. And it was so, and I have, it's not like I know how to find a mentor. You just, I keep myself, everything to myself, because I didn't want to tell my parents because my mom is so busy not to take care of my dad. And you don't want to tell your dad and then he's make his situation worse. So I kept everything myself. So I don't, and then it was just hard. It was hard in the sense that I have no one to talk to, like no one to talk to. like even to friend that you don't like, especially in China, you don't tell people how much trouble you're in. You always tell people how rich you're successful you are. So when I was
Wow.
with my friends or so-called friends, you don't tell them anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you
And
can't, you have no, really have no one to turn to. Could you turn to your wife at that time?
No, to turn to my wife, she was pregnant.
You don't want to freak her out, probably, right?
You're going to freak her out. And then there's once I forgot to give her money. So when she had to pay something, she had like, I forgot, like not enough money. She freaked out. And, you know, like, I can't understand why she freaked out. It's like, oh my God, I have no money in the account. I just forgot to transfer money. So he can't, I don't want to freak anybody. He's like, it's just not the right time to tell anybody.
Right.
So I kept everything myself.
And was the business doing okay?
I think it was doing very well.
Okay.
Until my dad unfortunately passed away after 1 year and 9 months of fighting with the cancer. It was expected. Then you start seeing the truth. John, I'll give you the best motivation speech I ever heard from my mom at my dad's funeral. And by the way, I'm being sarcastic about that. I gave a very good speech about my dad, and then everybody would stand up and, you know, applause. And my mom came to me and whispered in my ear when I was in tears. And then she said, Andy, you got to work hard. Everybody is rooting for you to fail.
Oof.
I'm like, and you look at all the uncle, at least with things, relative uncle, auntie, you're like, no, no, they're not. But then you're just like in disbelief or what situation I was in. So, and then at that time, I still have no idea. I didn't tell my wife about what my mom told me until years later. So
why do you think she said that? Did she say that? Was that meant to motivate you, or was that?
I think she meant to motivate me in this in an Asian way, but it was more like, oh, okay, you know, I'm only 27, no more 28. Hey, oh, okay.
Made it harder. It made it harder on you.
It didn't help. It didn't help in the sense that, okay, I cannot let my guard down. And then, so honestly.
And you're probably feeling even more lonely after this.
Yeah, I think so. I was extremely lonely. No one can, I got a lot of people who want to drink, eat, fun, but then no one I can talk to for business.
Which, I mean, you later join Entrepreneurs Organization, which, of course, not to turn this into an ad, not to turn this into an ad for EO, but I mean, it is an organization that exists for the very purpose of giving entrepreneurs that community, giving that, you know, them a place that they can turn to where they have other people that they can talk to.
You just don't feel alone anymore. That's the way of saying it. You're not alone. Yeah.
Right. Right. Did anything, you know, how long did you stay in Shanghai? Was there anything that made you feel like you turned the corner on that?
I stayed in Shanghai for a total of 10 years, 2016. So I think in between, I think I was always looking for other way of making money. I just didn't feel like my life is, I don't want to settle. So there was opportunity to say, okay, iron ore, mining, it was a big
iron
deal.
Ore. All right, so you take over your parents, your father's freight business, and now you go into explore another business opportunity, which is iron ore mining, and this is in Mexico, halfway a world.
It was
away.
In Mexico because I couldn't crack my way into Brazil, which is the main market or else Australia. There's already, they're called Tier One.
Okay.
Tier one supply, you go for tier two because it's cheaper, and then a lot of steel mill in China, they need to buy tier one and use tier two because it's cheaper to blend in to lower down their cost. So I went there. This funny thing, I made my first bucket of gold, I guess, money from Mexico because I was like doing some shipping for them. I make a very quick $35,000 net profit for absolutely nothing, just coordinating this and that, and they get boats coming in, vessel coming in to China, $35,000. And I was like, wow, that's easy money. That's really easy money. So I start talking to the supplier, hey, can I become middleman? And they say, yeah. And then I had no money in my pocket, so I convinced my aunt, one of my family friends, to say, hey, can you give me $1 million credit on a bank. And then I somehow was a very good sales. I persuade her to give me $1 million, and I brought that credit line to Mexico.
And what was the to buy mining equipment or
to
what?
Buy no to buy supplies.
To buy supplies.
And then I was able to leverage that, and then I start cold calling steel mill in China, introduce myself, and then when drinking with them, party with them, and then convince them, okay, give me a letter of credit, LC, for whatever quantity I promise you, whatever quality I promise you, I'll get it done. So I did. So, and then it wasn't until the first time I almost shit my pants when they sent a $2 million vessel coming in, and then we're supposed to give them 50,000 tons of iron ore. By the time the vessel was there, we only had 10,000 tons.
Ooh.
And then I called the buyer saying, I don't think we're going to make it this time. Guess what was his answer?
What did he say?
I don't give a F. In 10 days, if this vessel doesn't leave with 50,000 tons, we kill you.
This is from one of the Chinese?
Chinese owned buyer.
Oh my gosh.
So we scramble. I didn't sleep for 10 days. We buy everywhere possible. And then we made 55,000. We overload.
Oh my God.
That was my first bucket of gold. I think we make $1 million.
Damn.
On that.
Wow.
And then
so the like you're deal, like it's somewhere in the spectrum between they kill you and you made $1 million in the span
like
of 10 days.
When the vessel arrived in China, they treat me like I am the VIP. I represent Mexico. I'm the shit. I'm like the person. I'm exploding. I'll put a door of Mexican iron ore to the Chinese market. I was the shit.
So then were you like, I want to keep on doing this? Or were you like, this is crazy?
I was like, okay, you know what, $1 million we made? We're going to invest in the next deal. And then guess how much? We lost $2 million on the next deal. We make another million the next deal. So I kind of figured after 2 years, I don't have a business. This is not a business. It's not a business. And then my vendors start getting killed by the mafia.
Ugh.
So you kind of realize, okay, this is not the right way. And I don't want to be that stressed out every day. And I do want to see my kids. I don't want to see my wife. So I was living there for two years on and off. Without speaking a word, Spanish, it's just not right for me.
Where in Mexico were you?
I don't think you know this place. Lázaro Cárdenas is basically 3 hours away from Ixtapa, which is the resort area.
Okay.
I mean,
that must have been pretty lonely too, if your family wasn't there and you're...
Oh, I was lonely. I was lonely. I never watched that much, baseball in my room. Every night, and then I never cooked that much instant noodle because there's not much food to eat there.
Yeah,
and nice food there. But look, it's experience, right? It's made me tough.
So let's fast forward then to Freight Genesis. Your uncle tricked you into starting this business. How does that happen?
When I moved to the States, I didn't feel the reason why I left China. Well, this company is still there. Highlight is still operating as of today. I just feel like I'm no longer valuable in China. So back in
before we get to that, did you feel like was there a point you reached where you felt like the company was operating enough that you could leave? Did you have good?
I
you had
feel
a good
like
team.
I have my right hand person. We have the team kind of set up there, and I was never really that passionate about logistics. My dad was. I wasn't.
Right.
So I feel like I
kind
done
of an
my
accident.
Job.
Kind of an accidental logistics company owner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 2016, my foreman from EO China East is in Shanghai, asked me if I would love to move to the States. He will sponsor me. I was like, heck yes. So I moved there without even doing any study whatsoever about what Los Angeles looked like. So I moved there. I chose Chino Hill because I thought it was a nearby warehouse, which I could do some import. So I moved there. It was, and then I still refused to do any more logistic companies until my uncle told me, "Hey, I need some handling for you in LA. Can you just open a company? It's easy. Come, you barely would need to spend time." So he treated me to opening with him. And then when I told my friends from China, "Hey, I opened a logistic company," and next thing you know is a lot more shipment coming in. So, and that became, I guess I became a forwarder again in the States in an accident. And
So
that company just took off.
you're back into the same line of work that, but
I
not
never
something
left, and
you're,
then I really
yeah.
elevate. Basically, I put down more logistic, I guess, work
Yeah.
for me. And then because I also have been doing pen, I mean, and later on I have been doing pandemic, which the business really kick off.
Yeah, let's talk about
So
that. I mean, well, during the pandemic, there also were a ton of logistics issues. So how did you deal with that during that time period?
we just had to face it, and I guess I keep telling myself, enjoy the problem. Every day I woke up, enjoy the problem, enjoy the problem. It's just looking at pace yourself, and then during that time, I start using virtual assistant, remote talent, because and then it's when I explored the benefit of outsourcing. But get back to the logistic, it was a money-making time of 2 years. But the only thing I think I've done differently than other forwarder is I did not reinvest the money I made to rent a bigger warehouse, to hire more. I was very cautious because I knew that fundamentally the market is never, it's not real during pandemic.
So you knew
So
that this it got much
it's
bigger, but you
temporary.
knew it died down, so you didn't want
It
to
would die down.
overinvest. Yeah,
That's
okay.
like you only every household can only purchase that much more things to their home.
Yeah.
So you knew they're purchasing so much because the government gave them money, but at the end, they
Right.
get back to normal. They're going to purchase the way they used to before pandemic.
Right,
So I
right.
knew situational. You don't take
Now,
situational thing.
you ended up also starting a company and you became the biggest isolation gown provider during
Yeah.
the pandemic.
So, okay, John, this is a funny one. At the very beginning, our pandemic, I bet every business thought this is the end of their whatever money or whatever. So I have all my credit card lying on my table, and then calling each of the credit card company and see how much more credit I can use. I feel like, okay, I use all the credit card. If I don't pay them, I will leave USA. I was like, okay, this is my last layer, last frontier, however you call. And then one day at ELLA chat room, somebody from one of the members post, "Hey, MLK, Martin Luther King Jr., Martin Luther King Hospital is looking for a 95."
The
I
masks,
Google what N95, which is the mask, right? And
yeah.
then I vividly remember, oh, there's a warehouse 9 minutes away from my home in Chino Hill. Legendary said they have N95. I went in the next morning, took
You,
photo, sent it
this
to my
is
friend.
the during the pandemic, you just went straight down there, walked down,
Yeah.
knocked on the door.
Walk down there. "Hey, I heard you have a 95. Can I see it?" I took photo, I took video, and then within 2 hours, the hospital sent a truck with cash. They inspected. They gave me money, and I was like, "Wow, that's a quick $4,000 money, whatever." I
So
forgot how much.
did you buy the masks from the warehouse?
Yeah,
So you
like
bought
they
them
gave
and then
me
you
cash.
resold them.
I
Okay.
passed whatever the cost of the cash to the warehouse, and then it was cash transaction. And then, wow, that's a quick $4,000 money for doing this. And
Yeah.
then the next thing, the member was so appreciated on this thing. She posted thank you notes on ELLA chat room. I still have that screenshot. And then it's like, thank you for this thing. And you're the man. Thank you for saving this hospital, which I did. But I also made money. So I didn't feel like you thank me for it. I made money. Oh,
Yeah.
it's not like I didn't do it for charity. And then within spend out 5 minutes, I got 20 different messages and phone call from ELLA members. Say, "Hey, I heard you're the mask guy. I heard you're the PPE guy." And again, it's a fake it until you make it. I say, "Sure, I am." And then I just figure, okay, why not register a new company called Mask Guru? And then And then rumors spread very fast to all the way to China. And then we had a factory reach out to me. Rumor says, Andy, you can sell PPE, which I didn't. Okay. I say, sure. Can we ship our isolation gown to you? Give me an address. So guess how many containers arrive within the next 1 month, John?
How many? 10.
50 containers arrived to my door. And by the way,
where did you put
the warehouse?
Warehouse.
I did not. While the containers on the way, we get notified. I start searching for warehouses. So I have EO members who I warehouse. I was begging everybody to take over my 50. So without, like, I didn't know until 6 months later. And then when I was acknowledge that, Andy, you do realize that you're the largest isolation gown supplier in the entire North America.
Wow.
So my company, Masters Guru, from zero, we went from zero to $5.5 million in spend out 6 months.
Wow, that's insane.
And then it was crazy.
There was a period of time where everyone was trying to get PPE. Why was it just your network? Like, how were you able to find this supply when everyone else was desperate to find it?
I think it's just once you have that reputation, and then honestly, I'm always the guy say, hey, so for instance, John, you say, hey, Andy, I have 2 pallets of masks. I know I will not believe a word you say until you say, John, what's your address? I'm gonna inspect myself. I think my reputation is I don't just do transaction.
You verify.
I verify.
Yeah.
So I and then honestly, anybody who want to buy with me, we always do the transaction at the parking lot. So it was so many times was like, okay, where's your money? Where's your mask? I'm not going to give you my mask. I've never seen the money the other way around. So I'd done it at the beginning of the stage. This is what I did. People would think I'm doing cocaine, but I was doing masks.
Funny, yeah, more profitable than cocaine.
More valuable than cocaine.
Exactly. Okay? For that period of time.
Yes.
So you end up, I wanted to ask you, when we were talking about Freight Genesis earlier, you said that you were very careful during the pandemic. You knew that this was a bubble. You knew that there was an inflated demand during that period of time. So you're very careful to not overinvest, not, you know, buy too much equipment. With Masguro, you said you went from zero to 5.5 million. How did you protect yourself? Because I'm sure you also realized with PPE that this was not going to last forever. So how did you ensure that you did not make that mistake with that business?
Oh, same thing. It's once you start trending down, like, here's the thing. I have a mentality when the market tell you it's going down, you don't need to prove to the market. No, you're wrong. The market is a macro way of telling you this is going down. Then you know that, like, people start going out, you know, masks is not going to need it. And that means isolation gown. So we start selling cheaper and cheaper, cheaper. Mm. And we are the first few supplier. We start giving away for free. Toward the end, we're begging the hospital to take it for free. I'll even chip in some money to ship it for you for free.
Because you wanted to get it off your hands.
Because, you know, once this doesn't solve, then you're going to be owning a lot of warehouse storage charge. So I think one of my experience is know when to get out.
Know,
like,
when to get out.
You
yeah.
know. Like,
yeah.
Just like Iron War, you know time to quit. Like, I used to want to prove everybody wrong.
Yeah.
But that's just being ego. That's ego talk.
Let's talk about optimizers. You mentioned earlier that this was inspired by your previous businesses where you started using. So how did you start using the kind of outsourced remote talent?
I was able to afford a service called CEO coaching. Should we hold that?
Yeah.
So my coach, she was coaching me, and she was coaching for Mass Guru to help me to expand. Mm-hmm. And then one day she just said, you know how to use virtual assistant. I was like, what's that? She was the one who made the intro. What that is, I Google, and I used one of the servers, one of the agency to place 3 people for me, and wasn't pleasant because I was paying like nearly $2,800 a month. And my operation person is like always falling asleep doing my shift, doing my time. And I have to one day ask her, okay, why are you always asleep? She said, sorry, Sandy, I have to work in the morning. I'm like, why? I thought my money was good enough for you. She said, no, I'm only getting paid $450 out of $2,800.
Wow.
She was getting a fraction of that. So I told her, you know what? Screw that. Quit your job. Quit from them. Come to me. I'll pay you more. Okay. And then I was complaining to my friends from EO Philippines. Like, hey, my who's now my co-founders. Hey, this sucks. This business sucks. Like, what the heck? And then he said, Andy, in EO, you want to complain about it or you want to do something about it? And the next thing I know, we start a company that focusing on helping small business like you and me to grow with outsourced remote talent. And then also most importantly, we want to make a difference for our Filipino talent. Like you want to get paid. So we hardly negotiate with our virtual talent. Like however you want to pay, you want to get paid, this is the money we want to pay you. We don't want to negotiate on that. Yeah. Yeah.
And
That's it.
you mentioned that you have a business partner. How did you decide that this is a long, could be a long conversation, but how did you decide that that was the right business partner for you?
I think it's about value alignment. What do you believe in? What's your, and then honestly, I'm happy my first business partner is like we have extremely different personality. It's like marriage. You can't have two alpha. It won't work. So he's alpha in his industry and alpha in my industry. But then with this together, they let me to be running the business the way I want to. And then he's being a supporter, so supported to running this with me, but he gave me the whole freedom to run the way I want to run. And then give me, I know, but then not afraid to tell me my blind spot. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of using outsourced talent. I think there's amazing talent out there in this globe, and we've all become interconnected, especially after the pandemic, with different
Yeah.
tools that allow us to work together. But what are your opinions of the market now as we record this at the end of 2024? Obviously during the pandemic, remote work was very popular, and a lot of people were starting to hire VA agencies and hire outsourced staff and stuff like that. What do where do you see it, like, just is there a lot more potential out there this year? Has it seemed like with the pandemic receding, did it level off? What's the market look like?
The market is still big, and of course, there are more, I guess, company like us in the market. At the end, I think the market is still big because most of my clients never had a virtual assistant in their life. So a lot of small business now have to, because of inflation here, labor costs, and then lawsuit here, they tend to want to go for outsource. It could be in the Philippines, Latin America, or Eastern Europe. I think the trend is still there. But with the AI coming, the difference between now versus, let's say, 2 or 3 years ago is you don't need to have, so suppose you have a couple vacancies, like you have five vacancies 5 years ago, for the same five opening, you can use two to three virtual assistant or remote talent. We say that right now. Feel that because of AI. Like
Plus AI,
the
yeah.
AI is not here to replace us. AI is here to make us more efficient. The one who doesn't use AI, those other remote talent will be replaced. The market is still there.
Yeah. We're almost out of time, but do want to ask you about your involvement in Entrepreneurs Organization. You've been heavily involved, sort of as president, sort of on regional roles. We talked earlier about how lonely you felt early in your career when you had to step in. You didn't have anyone to turn to. Talk a little bit about the impact that EO has had on you personally and professionally.
Oh, where can we begin? I think it is a gateway for me to really share my ups and downs, my 5%. It's like, and then also a lot of friends from I met from EO, they have no problem telling me what the heck I'm doing wrong. Like I need people, I have enough people to tell me how perfect I am. I
Just
don't
not
have enough people.
relatives.
Yeah. Just not relatives, right? I don't have enough people to tell me what the hell I'm doing wrong. And then EO is a place to help to show your blind spots. And then also, I guess it's a community where I really am, I thrive. My business basically AX since I joined EO. I didn't realize who I am, what I want to do. I find my tribe. I find my community here, especially EOLA. I love my chapter. Yes, I was the president just past this past June. And I'm still involved in regional, and hopefully I do for more and more. I'm a learning expert, so feel free to reach out to me on any learning things. And then, I mean, I'm really here to, because I'm inspired to make a difference in people's life and my life.
And then my last question, I'm a big fan of gratitude, especially expressing gratitude to any
Yeah.
peers or contemporaries who've helped you in your journey. Who would you want to acknowledge?
Oh, the first one is definitely my wife. My wife, Ruby, definitely led me to be who I want to be. Like, she allowed me, she led me to travel anywhere I want, to enjoy my life, foreign retreat, business time. She led me to be who I want to be. And I want to thank to my ELLA people, especially my ELLA people. I got a couple of very close friends, Alice, Elizabeth, Mitch, Madam Poncho. Like, I have a lot, Brad. I have a lot of people there. Cindy, they challenged me every way possible. And my foreign mate, I have a couple of foreign before, and then they really were there. When everything was done working, they were there for me, like literally there for me. They cry with me, they succeed with me, they were always there for me. And of course, I guess my family, not guess, I know my family, they're my cornerstone. And an EMP classmate, you say
Yes,
you.
that's right.
It's honestly, if you were in Yale long enough, I would be shocked that you did not try to apply for EMP. It's like game changer.
And EMP is the Entrepreneurial Master's Program. It's kind of like an executive MBA within entrepreneurs organization.
65 people around the globe. It's the most, it's hardest program to get into. It's not about money, it's about how they want everyone to be there, to be the one that wanting to, trying to change, trying to make a difference, impact in the community. That's what I think.
Andy, it's been such a pleasure hearing your backstory. Where can people go to learn more about you and Optimizers and other things you're involved in?
Thank you. Well, kind of follow me on LinkedIn or my Facebook. I'm not active in social media, but I'm very private because of Mexico, because I that's another story I want to tell you later. But I'm always around. If you're from EL, you probably will see me either in regional or global events. I don't miss much on any of the EL activities. Thank you,
Awesome.
John. Thank
Awesome.
you.
Thank you so much, Andy.